20. The first light on the roof outside, very early morning. The leaves on all the trees tremble with a soft awakening to any breeze the dawn may offer. And then, far off, around a curve of silver track, comes the trolley, balanced on four small steel-blue wheels, and it is painted the color of tangerines. Epaulets of shimmery brass cover it, and pipings of gold. And its chrome bell bings if the ancient motorman taps it with a wrinkled shoe. The numerals on the trolley's front and sides are bright as lemons. Within, its seats prickle with cool green moss. Something like a buggy whip flings up from its roof to brush the spider thread high in the passing trees from which it takes its juice. From every window blows an incense, the all-pervasive blue and secret smell of summer storms and lightning. Down the long, elm-shadowed streets, the trolley moves along. The motorman's gray-gloved hand touched gently, timelessly, to the levered controls. At noon, the motorman stopped his car in the middle of the block and leaned out. "Hey!" And Douglas and Charlie and Tom and all the boys and girls on the block saw the gray glove waving and dropped from trees and left skip ropes in white snakes on lawns to run and sit in the green plush seats, and there was no charge. Mr. Tritton, the conductor, kept his glove over the mouth of the money box as he moved the trolley on down the shady block, calling. "Hey," said Charlie, "where are we going?"
"Last ride," said Mr. Tritton, eyes on the high electric wire ahead. "No more trolley. Bus starts to run tomorrow. Gonna retire me with a pension, they are. So, a free ride for everyone. Watch out!"
He ricocheted the brass handle. The trolley groaned and swung round an endless green curve, and all the time in the world held still, as if only the children and Mr. Tritton and his miraculous machine were riding an endless river away.
"Last day?" asked Douglas, stunned. "They can't do that. It's bad enough the green machine is gone, locked up in the garage and no arguments. And bad enough my new tennis shoes are getting old and slowing down. How'll I get around? But they can't take off the trolley." "Why," said Douglas, "no matter how you look at it, a bus ain't a trolley. Don't make the same kind of noise. Don't have tracks or wires. Don't throw sparks. Don't pour sand on the tracks. Don't have the same colors. Don't have a bell. Don't let down a step like a trolley does." "Hey, that's right," said Charlie. "I always get a kick watching a trolley let down the step, like an accordion." "Sure," said Douglas.
And then they were at the end of the line. The silver tracks, abandoned for 18 years, ran on into rolling country. In 1910, people took the trolley out to Chessman's Park with vast picnic hampers. The track, never ripped up, still lay rusting among the hills.
"Here's where we turn around," said Charlie. "Here's where you're wrong." Mr. Tritton snapped the emergency generator switch. "Now."
The trolley, with a bump and a sailing glide, swept past the city limits, turned off the street, and swooped downhill through intervals of odorous sunlight and vast acreages of shadow that smelled of toadstools. Here and there, creek waters flushed the tracks, and sun filtered through trees like green glass. They slid whispering on meadows washed with wild sunflowers, past abandoned way stations empty of all save transfer-punched confetti, to follow a forest stream into a summer country, while Douglas talked.
"Why, just the smell of a trolley. That's different. I've been on Chicago buses. They smell funny."
"Trolleys are too slow," said Mr. Tritton. "Gonna put buses on. Buses for people and buses for school."
The trolley whined to a stop. From overhead, Mr. Tritton reached down huge picnic hampers. Yelling, the children helped him carry the baskets out by a creek that emptied into a silent lake where an ancient bandstand stood crumbling into termite dust. They sat eating ham sandwiches and fresh strawberries and waxy oranges, and Mr. Tritton told them how it had been 20 years ago, the band playing on that ornate stand at night, the men pumping air into their brass horns, the plump conductor flinging perspiration from his baton, the children and fireflies running in the deep grass, the ladies with long dresses and high pompadours treading the wooden xylophone walks with men in choking collars. There was the walk now, all softened into a fiber mush by the years. The lake was silent and blue and serene, and fish peacefully threaded the bright reeds, and the motorman murmured on, and the children felt it was some other year, with Mr. Tritton looking wonderfully young, his eyes lighted like small bulbs, blue and electric. It was a drifting, easy day, nobody rushing, and the forest all about. The sun held in one position as Mr. Tritton's voice rose and fell, and a darning needle sewed along the air, stitching, restitching designs both golden and invisible. A bee settled into a flower, humming and humming. The trolley stood like an enchanted calliope, simmering where the sun fell on it. The trolley was on their hands, a brass smell, as they ate ripe cherries. The bright odor of the trolley blew from their clothes on the summer wind. A loon flew over the sky, crying. Somebody shivered. Mr. Tritton worked on his gloves.
Well, time to go. Parents'll think I stole you all for good.
The trolley was silent and cool dark, like the inside of an ice cream drugstore. With a soft green rustling of velvet buff, the seats were turned by the quiet children, so they sat with their backs to the silent lake, the deserted bandstand, and the wooden planks that made a kind of music if you walked down the shore on them into other lands. Bing! Went the soft bell under Mr. Tritton's foot, and they soared back over sun-abandoned, withered flower meadows, through woods, toward a town that seemed to crush the sides of the trolley with bricks and asphalt and wood when Mr. Tritton stopped to let the children out in shady streets. Charlie and Douglas were the last to stand near the opened tongue of the trolley, the folding step, breathing electricity, watching Mr. Tritton's gloves on the brass controls. Douglas ran his fingers on the green creek moss, looked at the silver, the brass, the wine color of the ceiling. Well, so long again, Mr. Tritton.
Goodbye, boys.
See you around, Mr. Tritton.
See you around.
There was a soft sigh of air. The door collapsed gently shut, tucking up its corrugated tongue. The trolley sailed slowly down the late afternoon, brighter than the sun, all tangerine, all flashing gold and lemon, turned a far corner, wheeling, and vanished, gone away.
School buses! Charlie walked to the curb. Won't even give us a chance to be late to school. Come get you at your front door. Never be late again in all our lives. Think of that nightmare, Doug. Just think it all over.
But Douglas, standing on the lawn, was seeing how it would be tomorrow, when the men would pour hot tar over the silver tracks, so you would never know a trolley had ever run this way. He knew it would take as many years as he could think of now to forget the tracks, no matter how deeply buried. Some morning in autumn, spring, or winter, he knew he'd wake, and if he didn't go near the window, if he just lay deep and snug and warm in his bed, he would hear it, faint and far away. And around the bend of the morning street, up the avenue, between the even rows of sycamore, elm, and maple, in the quietness before the start of living, past his house, he would hear the familiar sounds, like the ticking of a clock, the rumble of a dozen metal barrels rolling, the hum of a single immense dragonfly at dawn, like a merry-go-round, like a small electrical storm, the color of blue lightning coming, here, and gone, the trolley's chime, the hiss like a soda fountain spigot as it let down and took up its step, and the starting of the dream again, as on it sailed along its way, traveling a hidden and buried track to some hidden and buried destination.
"Kick the can after supper?" asked Charlie.
"Sure," said Douglas.
"Kick the can."